Everyone, welcome back to the Quantum Heart Cafe. I hope everyone is having a wonderful start to the week, and you had a lovely and blessed weekend. And right now, and where I live in my part of the world, it's spring is finally here, and summer will be here pretty soon. I mean, this year has been just flying. I don't know about you, but it just feels like we're going at like a at least with like atomic clocks, like they. It feels like time is just speeding up, but I wonder if maybe they're messing around with the atomic clocks on purpose to kind of make time speed up, if that makes sense. And I just hope that, everyone's having a lovely day, and welcome to the Quantum Heart Cafe. This is a podcast where I talk about different subjects, and I share the books that I'm reading. Often I'll read a book on a topic and then I'll kind of discuss it and give my opinions, but then also relate what I'm learning in the book to current events. And they're the kind of current events that don't really get covered on the mainstream or even the alternative media. Whether that's the, technology and metaphysics and so on. So, it's stuff that, doesn't really get talked about too much, but I have an interest in them, so that's where I share that interest on the podcast. And I'm interested in different subject matters too, like I really like metaphysics and spirituality, and I just like thinking and discussing what's going on in the world, having maybe a bit more of a philosophical conversation and exploring different viewpoints through the books that I read. And I hope that, as you accompany me on this little journey on these shows, that you'll enjoy what you listen to, but then you also, be interested enough to read the books as well, or to, explore the subject matter. Without further ado, I do want to continue the book that I was talking about, last show and the previous shows. It's kind of a continuation of Beyond the Box, the B.F. Skinner, the book about B.F. Skinner and his behavior technology. And I want to continue that discussion by talking about the last chapter in the book. And I'm also going to include the conclusion just because it's kind of a shorter conclusion. And I have been kind of going on and on with this series, so it would be nice to just kind of wrap it up. But before I get started, I always like to give a moment of gratitude. And, I am grateful that it's interesting. Like, when I wake up, because the, days are getting longer now, the birds are out singing. And it's amazing how birds just, they're able to sing and bring in the new cycle for the day. And it feels like their songs are different. Like, I was listening to them, they seem like their songs are different. It's probably also because some of the migratory birds are here, like the robins. They're really cute. And so it's like their songs are accompanying the songs from the other birds. And it's just a really nice chorus of singing and that the birds bring as the dawn approaches. And then I guess once the migratory birds and, birds kind of move on for the winter time, then, it does make sense that the songs change. But I'm just grateful to be able to tune into that and really enjoy listening to them share their songs. And, they sing their songs for each other and for themselves. And I just feel blessed that I get to, listen to that, even though they, whether or not I was there or happened to be there listening, they'd still sing regardless. And then I also like to talk about, some of the coffee, because this is a Quantum Heart Cafe, so I'm trying to also include the spirit of a coffee shop, because I do like to have philosophical conversations in cafes and, share what I'm drinking. I'm just having my decaf coffee. It's a really nice blend. It's from a local coffee shop not too far away. And, I try not to drink caffeine. I've been cutting down on the amount of caffeine I have. And I find that decaf, because I do kind of like the taste of coffee, but I don't need all that caffeine. So decaf is nice. And I was enjoying a nice cup of coffee before. the show. I've tried having it during the show, but I just end up getting into the show, and oftentimes my coffee is like stone cold by the time I'm finished recording. So I figured, oh, you know, maybe I'll just have a coffee before I start my show, and then, you know, I can always talk about it during the show. And of course I want to start talking about different teas and exploring those too. I just have a real love for decaf coffee right now. It's really good. And water, of course. You know, water is amazing. Okay, so I do want to continue, you know, with the chapter. And it's about, in this chapter, the author focuses on, she gives two examples of intentional communities that were created by people who were inspired by B.F. Skinner's book, Walden 2. Which is a story about a utopia. I haven't read it, so I'm not too sure what the gist of it is, but the people who made these communities did read it, and they were inspired to try creating something in this society. And so I was reading this chapter, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And you know, I know with smart cities and so on, like there is a move towards creating intentional communities as well. So I thought that it'd be a really interesting discussion for today to kind of parallel what I learned in the chapter with some of the stuff I've been learning about, you know, with smart cities. And I follow Allison McDowell's work, and she's done and a few other researchers, and they've done a tremendous amount of research on this. So I'll probably provide some links to, if you're interested in learning a bit more learning a bit more as a result of listening to the show. And so I'm going to kind of begin about, you know, in the chapter, the author kind of gives an overview of the two communities, and then she goes into each community specifically. So I'll do the same for this presentation. So a lot of those, the people who read that story, Walden 2, they were inspired to create their own experimental communities back in the 1970s. And as I mentioned just before, the author talks about two specific communities, Twin Oaks in Virginia, and I hope I said this right, Los Horcones in Sonora, Mexico. The communities reflected Skinner's work, where instead of a centralized system state, there were decentralized libertarian social communities, which are a small part of the system. And they foster individuality through community and interdependence. And, you know, I mean, on the surface of it, none of that stuff sounds bad. I think that, you know, that's a good thing. But unfortunately, the way... And as I've stated, I will put some links to Allison McDowell's work, especially some of the work she did around WeWork, where there's a lot of like office spaces and places where people work, but then they have their living spaces either there or some place close by. And, you know, this idea of having people close to their work, like paramedics and nurses having housing provided for them close to the hospital. And on the surface of it, you know, it doesn't sound like a bad thing. The only thing is that people won't have, you know, a say in this. So that's what I mean, like these intentional communities didn't really go away. There are, you know, smart cities and so on have, there is intention behind them and behind how cities now are being built, especially like big high-rise rental apartments and stuff like that, which I don't know if you live in a city, but if you notice those big skyscrapers, like at least some of them can be at least 50 floors high. They're all glass and concrete, very little privacy. And so, you know, this hasn't really gone away, but the author specifically talks about these two communities back in the 1970s, and I think I got the impression that they're still around. But there are, you know, there are other places and other people in society that are also inspired by these intentional communities. And I think that's what I was trying to get at with that, with my comments about Allison's work in Smart Cities and WeWork. So the two communities were created because of their founders' desires to use Skinner's principles to change and improve society. Horcone's underlying way of life is guided by behavior engineering, and Twin Oaks expanded and modified its ideology to include the human potential movement. So it wasn't just behaviorism. What makes them different, Twin Oaks different from Horcone's is, Horcone, I hope I said that. I think it's Horcone. What makes Twin Oaks different is that they were willing to include other ideologies beside just behaviorism. And whether it's the human potential movement or other kind of more humanistic approaches to the community building. And while Twin Oaks isn't as stringent as Horcone is with the behavior engineering, the author still included them because she wanted to include an example of an intentional community which was still successful at the time of her writing this book. And I'm not sure, like I said, I'm not sure if they're still around, but sounds like when I was reading through the chapter that Twin Oaks is pretty successful, maybe has more membership than Las Horcone. When the author starts talking about Twin Oaks, she talks about how, I think it was one of the founders, Kate Kincaid, who she read Walden 2, and it struck a chord with her, and so she was one of the founders of Twin Oaks. Because Kate longed for this type of intentional community. And many people like Kate thought that intentional communities could be the solution to personal and ideological issues. Many of Walden 2 fans had become disillusioned with mainstream society, and they felt drawn to the idea of a utopia. They felt Walden 2 was a blueprint for creating the type of community that they wanted. And after a conference was held in 1966, two groups of people who attended joined together and founded Twin Oaks. And, like, I can understand the sentiment of wanting to create intentional community, and I'm not, like, you know, against, like, if people want to get together and create their own community, I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, where I kind of get weary is when it's, like, society planning, like, the system building something like this. When society is wanting to, or this predatory system that we're under wants to build these types of communities. And I'd also argue, too, that, or suggest that if you want to build an intentional community, or just a better sense of community in your own area, like, you'll think about, because Western imperialism has really warped our view about what community is. And I think when we start to, at least for me, when I've been on kind of like a, and this isn't anything about woke politics, it's mostly just learning how the dominator mindset and the dominator way of thinking kind of shows up in my own world or in my own life. And as I'm learning how to do that and learning to get more in touch with my heart and being more of a, compassion and that sort of thing, it helps me to find that kind of community to, like, create it. And then it also helps because it's, like, I'm on sort of, like, this healing journey to heal from, you know, Western imperialism and so on, because it's done so much damage to us and the planet for the last, like, couple thousand years, at least to the Mr. Pluto, or sorry, Plato. I always get their names mixed up, but, you know, you go back to Plato, and he talks about, you know, when he talks about The Rule of the Few by the Many, or sorry, The Rule of the Many by the Few. And his thoughts, and, you know, he has some interesting stuff to say, I'm sure, but he also, when he split emotion from intelligence and put intelligence above emotion, like, that was kind of where, you know, stuff started to go wrong. And I've been reading a book called Yorugu, and it's by an author named Dr. Marimba Annie Jr., and she's a Pan-African author, and I read books from all sorts of different people and authors and stuff, so and I've been learning a lot from her, and just kind of how Western imperialism has sort of shaped society, and especially in Europe and stuff, and then eventually, you know, came over here. John Trudell also talked about, you know, what happened with Western civilization, you know, Western imperialism when it first started in Europe and then eventually reached Turtle Island. So I think going on that journey and healing and finding ways to heal and have these important discussions, that will help enable a sense of community again. And I don't know if intentional communities, because it's like you're kind of, you know, especially with the astrology, like, I think United States and maybe even Canada is going through its Pluto return. And so I think these discussions are going to start to appear more and more. And I think it's a way for, you know, the universe and stuff to maybe start to heal some of this, because a lot of pain and a lot of suffering has happened over the last couple thousand years. And, you know, that doesn't just go away. And that's why I think it's important to talk about these things as well. So these intentional communities, like, and on the surface of it, there's nothing wrong with them, but I can't see how they're going to last, because, you know, there's all this underlying pain beneath it. It's like you're trying to put a Band-Aid over a big gaping wound. It just doesn't really work. And a wound that probably has a lot of, you know, starting to get infected. So, you know, you have to kind of cut through the dead flesh in order for the new flesh to come through and heal. And I know this, it means having uncomfortable conversations and being willing to talk about things that, you know, most people don't want to, but I think it's important. So anyway, I'm going to continue on with the book, otherwise, or my review of the chapter, otherwise this is going to drag on forever. So what I found interesting about Twin Oaks is that they created, they wanted to kind of mirror a system, or the system that was created in Walden 2, where Skinner outlined a system where members earned labor credits, and in exchange, all the members' needs are met within the community. So it's a 4 hours a day to focus on completing the work required by the community. Members can choose their tasks, so both skilled and unskilled work was done at one's own schedule. Twin Oaks quickly realized it needed to establish an organized labor system. They experimented with a variable credit system for at least 5 years. They eventually abandoned this because the community got too big. So they went to a 1 hour equals one credit system. And members who fell into a labor credit hole, so I guess that's like debt, they were either downgraded to provisional membership or they were just kicked out. Eventually, labor credits weren't as valued over time, and the community focused on work and community for its own sake. And that kind of is a little microcosm into the idea, or maybe one of the possible ways that token economics could appear in society as we move through, you know, this year and into the next few years. Because there is a desire to have a token economy by the system. And, you know, it could be that, you know, we do our work or whatever and we get credits, like tokens. And this UBI is sort of like a token engineer, and it, you know, it's not going to be free money. Like, there's no such thing as free money. And it'd be conditioned on doing work, and it could also be conditioned on health metrics and so on. Like, it's not there's some pretty packaging around it, like a marketing and or a story. Like, they're going to try to sell the story that this is a good idea, but there's something about it that I don't. I could see something like that being abused, not intentionally abused, but I could see it going in that direction. Or maybe just abandoned, like the labor credits were eventually abandoned. But, I guess it's like, if you don't work, do you not get your tokens? Or if you're not doing the right job, are you not getting your tokens? If you eat a candy bar, are you gonna be without or kind of have tokens withheld? Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's gonna be behavior engineering using token economies. And it might not be a massive one size fits all token economy. It could be, that we see these small small communities using it, but then they're like tied in together some as a network. And if you think about computers and network topology, where maybe each community or each building, because there's like, if you have 50 floors of people and, at the bottom they have like shops and stuff, then, you could have a little mini token economy right there, and then it's like connected to maybe the municipal token economy and so on. So it's, it won't be a one size fit, or may not be a one size fits all thing. It could be like specific for a community, but those tokens would still all be tied in with each other in these little token economies and intentional communities. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because it's not something that is often spoken about in any of the medias, like mainstream or alternative media. And this book, Beyond the Box, this book on behaviorism and token economies is kind of a good way to talk about it. So I'm going to continue on with the chapter. I'll just kind of read through, because I like to take notes and kind of create slides. So I'm just going to read through them and finish reading them, and then I'll give some more thoughts at the end. So in Walden 2, egalitarianism was a key principle, and things like job titles were done away with. Everyone did the same work and had access to the same amount of resources. And men and women were considered equals. In the book Walden 2, the community was overseen by a board of planners and managers. Planners were appointed by managers for 10 years. People could become managers through apprenticeship and training. Managers were specialists who were specially trained to run particular divisions like the nursery, food, dairy. In theory, planners and managers weren't above anyone else. Despite the lack of democracy, there was supposedly no abuse of power because there was no private wealth. And Twin Oaks tried a method of self-governance that was done by consensus. People discussed a topic until everyone came to an agreement. But the approach didn't last very long because anyone who disagreed had a veto, so I guess maybe it took forever to make decisions that way. Twin Oaks tried to mirror Walden 2 by having a system of planners and managers for about 5 years. They tried to keep it from becoming a dictatorship. Twin Oaks continued to refine this approach and included an opinion. An idea board where members could post any messages and documents on any aspect of community life. In 1994, Twin Oaks expanded its ideology to go beyond just behaviorism, and no one ideology was better than the other. The author thinks that just because the Twin Oaks didn't abuse power, that critics of the intentional communities feared a brave new world type dystopia, and the author of Beyond the Box thought that those fears were unwarranted. I don't, and that's just because you I mean, all you have to do is look up a history book or look up cults or anything like that, and when you have a cult of a personality or, you know, a small group of people running a community, and the power goes to their head, and so, you know, things could be abused pretty quickly. And then in the chapter, the author also talks about how Twin Oaks educated children, and I thought that was pretty interesting, so I made some notes about that. Because in Walden 2, children were raised communally, and children were given over to nurseries where the children were raised, and scientifically proven principles of child rearing were used. Parents could visit the children, but not form exclusive bonds with their biological children. Children could develop their own unique abilities at their own pace because education wasn't as structured. So much learning was undertaken in the fields, workshops, and laboratories of the community, where the kids studied, or what the kids studied was up to their individual interests. And it kind of does happen a little bit, as some of like the in you know real in this kind of real world, like with the I think the Montessori schools and the Waldorf schools do this, where kids, you know, have a little more autonomy over what they learn in schools. But what's interesting is that, you know, the powers that, or the system, and people who are interested in these Web3 technologies and token economics and so on are interested in having more kids kind of follow this model. Like, you know, Alison McDowell often talks about it being like a Pokemon Go type education, where you get badges and experience points for going out into the community and doing stuff, and you don't have the idea of schools would change in the future, so it wouldn't be like a classroom where kids are going for most of the day. It would be they go to a community center somewhere and they do their lessons for a few hours, and then they go play sports, or they go do some workshop in the community, or they go play some like online games or something. So it wouldn't be like the education that we grew up with. It would be this type of education where kids are undertaking workshops and you know, learning in the field and the laboratories of the community. And, you know, it's one thing for that to happen in a book, but it's another thing for that to happen in the whole of society, like, or the whole of this society. But that's kind of the model that the system would like to go in. So I thought that was interesting. Like, I thought that was an interesting part of the book to include in today's discussion, because I think it's important, especially if you have, I don't have kids, but if you do have kids, it's really important to kind of keep an eye on what's going on with education at the school. And I'll link to some of Allison's work. There's also another lady, her name's Lynn Davenport, and she's done an amazing amount of work around activism and kind of talking about this, what's going on with the public schools in the States. So I'll make sure to put some links with her blog, or a link to her blog and her articles as well. Especially, so, you know, if you're a parent or a grandparent or something, this is really important to become aware of. So I'm going to continue with the book, or the rest of the chapter on childcare and education in Twin Oaks. And eventually, Twin Oaks finally found a system that seemed to work. The kids were split in three groups, and the newborns were raised by their parents. Then they were sent to a center where they were raised communally. So they would stay with their parents for a little bit, and then eventually they would go to some community center where they were raised by more than one adult. They did try a cooperative school and homeschooling, but their approach didn't work. So they ended up going to the local Montessori school for a time. And presently, children are educated by one of three ways. So there's the Montessori schools, the public school, and the homeschool. And I feel like that's a type of model that could be used for, you know, more of, or the rest of society, or the wider society, especially the Montessori schools. I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with Montessori schools, but just, it's like they want to use that type of model, but for all the kids. And they want to have AI and other token or behavior engineering technology following and tracking the kids and collecting their data and learning about these kids and making predictions about them. And that's one of the more sinister aspects of this technology, in my opinion. Anyway, so I'm going to continue on because it's like, I'll make sure to post some resources if anyone wants to do further reading. The communal experience of raising children largely failed, and Kincaid felt it was because there was no central authority figure who was respected and competent with child rearing. I think it's just because parents wanted to keep their kids, you know, like, they didn't want to have to part with their children and have, like, I mean, it's nice when you have, you know, your parents, but then you also have, like, aunties and uncles and other community members helping to raise kids. But there's still that bond that you have with your own biological kids. I mean, I could only imagine, but, you know, I am a kid, I'm someone's kid, and that bond is quite strong, and I don't think my parents would have wanted to have me communally raised, especially my mom. Like, she would be like, no, she's my kid. So I just feel like the reason why I didn't really take off is just because most people probably, you know, wanted to raise their children, which is pretty natural. and then I think, just to sum up the last part about Twin Oaks, during the early years of the community, some of Skinner's values did play an important role, even as the community eventually included other ideologies. And archived documents suggested that Skinner supported the Twin Oaks development and progress, and that Skinner was concerned that Twin Oaks wasn't appealing to the wider culture. And the community didn't want to try alternative child-rearing practices. Well, I can see why it's not really all that appealing to the wider community, and why most people aren't interested in alternative child-rearing practices, but anyway. So then the author starts talking about Los Orcone, which is the other intentional community, and it's a bit different from Twin Oaks in that it uses more strict in that it uses a lot more behavior engineering, and it doesn't really include other ideologies, which is what Twin Oaks did. So this intentional community used the science of behavior to readjust and transform social practices. They're still ideologically committed to behavior, the science of behaviorism. The community describes itself as a humanistic communitarian society that uses behaviorism to design culture and social practices. They wanted to use the principles of behaviorism to address some of society's ills, so they used Walden 2 as a reference, but not a working model. And they do have a different outlook than Twin Oaks. And they thought constant experimentation and cultural design were important for the community. So it started in 1971 when Juan Robinson and his wife, Maria Bustamante, I probably said that wrong, set up a school for children with behavioral deficits, and they wanted to use behavior analysis to treat the kids. The teachers were committed to using behavior technology in their education of students. The school was the first step towards the community's creation. In 1973, Los Orcone was established when seven aspiring communitarians took up the challenge of setting up a community that would be a laboratory to study behaviorism. A first step that they took was to outline a code of behavior based on self-management. From the beginning, members wanted to build a community based on the following, which is cooperation, pacifism, equity, income sharing, equality, and ecological sustainability. Eventually, Los Orcone expanded its community and established the Walden II International Association to help other interested parties establish communities based on behaviorism. The community operates in the same manner as Twin Oaks, but the membership is smaller, and that's probably because, I suspect that's because of the strict adherence to behavior engineering, and I don't think the vast majority of people are really all that interested in that. And then, and sorry if there's a little bit of background noise, it's a really nice day out today, so like some people are out playing. I don't have like a proper sound studio, so sometimes you may hear people out playing. I mean, it's nice, like people are out enjoying the sunshine, but if you hear a little bit of background noise, it's not much, I can't really do anything about that, because, you know, I'm not going to shout at kids to stop playing, because it really is a nice day out. But if you do hear some background noise, just have a little patience with me. Thank you. So the author continues with talking about Los Orcone when she talks about personocracy. So personocracy is the community's system of governance. It maximizes the reinforcing consequences of pro-social behavior and is non-hierarchical, it's non-hierarchy and is cooperative. So each member is involved with the community's decision-making process. Each area has its own coordinator. Each person's commitment to work in the area is recorded and monitored. They view their governance, and they view the people there view their government as cooperative decision-making. And then while the community is not considered a hierarchy, Juan, who is the founder of the Los Orcone, has a lot of charisma and authority within the community. So, you know, she kind of just said that he's sort of like a leader, even though it's not supposed to have a hierarchy, but it sounds like it does. So Los Orcone uses something called macro contingencies, which are a set of contingencies that work together to shape and maintain behavior. They do this because they think that to change behavior, you need to change the environment. And the unified environment is another a related concept that they use. So efforts to analyze and change complex systems of micro or macro contingencies, which are like chains of environmental events that work together to maintain a particular behavior. So there's a lot of manipulation of the environment to get the desired behavior out of people. Los Orcone is committed to using these behavior technologies to create a new experimental culture to replace the existing culture. And I feel like that's something that, you know, the system would like to do on a bigger scale. And it's interesting that they focus on changing the environment to change the behavior. So I feel like these people are probably well-versed in maybe some of the occult stuff. And again, I'm not saying that, I mean, I study spirituality and stuff like that. And in spiritual practice, there is the concept of the macro and the micro cosmos. So we are, as individuals, we're microcosmos, and we're connected to the macrocosmos and vice versa. So when we change ourselves on the inside, let's say we do some inner work, maybe we go to therapy or something like that, you know, we eat healthier, we change our outlook on life and so on. So we really do the inner work. Well, that has a a vibratory effect on the outside world, and so the macro then starts to change because we change. But then if the macro changes, then we change too. And I wonder if they knew about this. I wouldn't be shocked, put it that way. And it is interesting because later in the chapter, you know, Skinner makes a comment about a new Atlantis. And Atlantis is something that, you know, was thought to be a city that existed, and then a horrible calamity happened and it sunk into the ocean. But there's a lot of, like, you know, mystery and, you know, spiritual literature and stuff like that around Atlantis. And so I thought that was pretty peculiar, or at least eyebrow-raising. Like, oh, that's interesting. You consider it a new Atlantis. Are you an Atlantean? Or something like that, you know? Are you an Atlantean reincarnated? Anyway, I'll keep going. There's not too much left of the chapter. I'll only have a few more sets of notes. So, the author then goes on to talk about Skinner's utopian legacy. So she finishes with... So we finished off with talking about Las Orcone. And I just kind of provided a general overview of the community and stuff, and same thing with Twin Oaks. And so the last part of the chapter is about Skinner's utopian legacy. So, like, you know, there's a few people that felt that utopia's values lie not in its relation to the present practice, but to its but in its relation to a possible future. Its practicality is that it can overstep the immediate reality to create a desirable future to draw people in. They transform the most undesirable and destructive features of the present world, and they supposedly comment on how we can solve many of our pressing social problems. Like, my problem with utopias is that they don't really work. Like, you know, you've had despots throughout history that have promised utopias, but then, you know, awful things start to happen. Like, it just doesn't work. And that's where I think that inner journey of healing and seeing if we can, you know, heal the wounds among us, I think that's a better approach to having some sort of a sustainable future or something, rather than trying to create this technological utopia, it doesn't really exist. It's kind of a fantasy for a reason. And then beyond the fantasy could sometimes be something, again, well-intentioned, but then there's that saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and utopias can be, or the trying to create utopia can be hell on earth for people. And there have been innocent people throughout history that have died because of some, like I said earlier, some despot or dictator had an idea about a utopia. So I'm kind of skeptical when I hear this talk about utopian or a utopia, because it sounds good on paper. But when it comes to actually doing it, it doesn't really always turn out that great for people. And then just to conclude the chapter, and I'm actually also going to conclude the book. The chapters, the books, actually last chapters, the conclusion, it wasn't that long. So I decided to include it in this show and just kind of finish off the book. So... like I said earlier, I found it interesting that Skinner called his utopia the New Atlantis. And in the 1960s, behaviorism was eventually added to the American Psychological Association. And in the 1970s, the Midwest in the United States was a stronghold for behavior analysis. behavior analysts also established professional associations in the 1970s. South Florida now continues to be a stronghold for behaviorism, and now has a certification requirements. I found that an interesting, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but when they talked about South Florida, because I remember, like, a lot of people in the alternative media and alternative movements and stuff, especially over the last, like, few years with the, you know, the Rona and whatever, a lot of them relocated to Florida. And so you have them there, and then you have, like, Florida being a stronghold for behaviorism. And I've often heard Alison McDowell and a couple other researchers kind of talk about how, you know, it could be kind of a setup to manage their behavior or to have them usher in the token economy. And so that's where I found that kind of relationship to that behaviorism has to South Florida. And I wondered if it was a coincidence or not. So, you know, it just kind of made me think about that. Anyway, some behavior analysts were concerned that their continued marginalization from mainstream psychology. And some thought that resistance to behavior analysis is why it hasn't grown in general use by the public. Well, it's still here, but I think it doesn't appear to have had widespread growth. But with this technology that we have, in Web3 technology, that could change. Like, it could kind of be, like, it is already happening, like, behavior engineering with technology. Like, if we think about our smartphones and social media and just how much that's changed our behavior over the last couple of decades, it's pretty interesting. So maybe behaviorism itself hasn't grown publicly, but for sure the technology that we use now has been used to shape our behavior, and it will continue to be used to shape our behavior in the future. And of course, you know, the author of the book said that the, you know, behavior analysts would like to see behavior behaviorism grow among the general public, and they think that the practice will prove itself over time. And then the author states, while behavior technology hasn't overtly changed the world, it has shown itself useful in certain areas of society. As the gold standard in treating autism and other developmental disabilities such as ADHD and depression, which are also ripe for the token economy. And then the author's, you know, the last few points the last few points I have is that behaviorism is also being used to create environmental preservation projects and encourage pro-environmental behaviors. And it's also used in animal training. The environmental preservation projects, that's also really important. There's another researcher, I'll make sure to link his work in the show notes as well. His name is Leo Serencino, and he's done work and research on how token economies are kind of, and how, you know, the system would like to use them to, like, token economies for nature, like natural capital. So there's the human capital, which is us, and that's kind of what Alison McDowell and a few others have been researching. And then there's the nature capital, which is, you know, trees and animals and other living beings that are also being scooped up into this token economy and blockchain. And so it's interesting that, you know, behaviorism has also found its way into environmentalism and environmental preservation projects, and I find that to be another interesting coincidence, but maybe it's not such a coincidence after all. Anyway, so that concludes the book on Beyond the Box, B.F. Skinner's Behavior Technology from the Lab to Life. And I'll leave a link if anyone would like to purchase it. I think there's also a free copy on archive.org if you'd like to read an ebook. And I appreciate you sticking with me throughout this presentation and this last series. I know it's been a long series, but with these academic books, I usually like to take my time just because the chapters have really interesting stuff in them. But I do also like to take a break from the sort of academic material and read a story. And so that's what I'm going to talk about the next show, which is a story that I've been reading. I did pick up Madeline Ingalls' Inacceptable Time, and it's the fifth and final book in her quintet series, her Time Quintet series. And so far I've been reading it and really enjoying it. I don't want to give away too much, but just as a teaser, it has like stuff about ley lines and water and druids, time travel. It's really cool, and I think definitely A Wrinkle in Time is one of my favorites out of the five books, but this is like also one of my favorites, and then the others were good too, but I'm really enjoying reading this one, and I'm going to talk about it, and there's some really juicy, interesting stuff that I could kind of talk about in that book, or I can kind of create an interesting show around that book. So thank you for listening, and thank you for stopping by the cafe. So the next show is going to be about An Acceptable Time, which is Madeline Ingalls' book, and her whole series is worth checking out. And I appreciate you sticking by me with, as I talked about this, the Beyond the Box and B.F. Skinner. And I hope you learned something. I hope that I inspired you to read a book and to maybe check out some of the researchers that I'm going to be linking to in the show notes. And and I hope that everyone has a blessed week and enjoys the weather wherever you are in the world. And thank you so much for stopping by the cafe. Okay, bye-bye.